Good evening. James McCanney here with my Science Hour. This is May 2nd, 2013. So some interesting topics tonight. My pre-announcement for the show was I was going to be talking about Comet Ison, and that's true. I will be talking about Comet Ison, but in a very specific manner, and then relating this to other comets. So the main science topic, which, by the way, I did not pre-announce many times, is because the other talk show hosts who try and negate what I'm saying or throw out misinformation before I give my weekly lecture here, they try and jump on that. And so to prevent that, I usually just give some vague predictions about what I'm going to talk about. But the topic I'm specifically going to cover tonight is called symmetry and anti-symmetry in science, and especially in the world of comets. I'm going to give some examples of symmetry in the heavens, various types of symmetry, and then concentrate on the symmetry found in comet nuclei. And this is something, let's say, in mathematics. When I did presented the solution for the calculate primes, calculating directly the prime numbers, something very interesting came out of that work. And nobody in a million years in the mathematics world would ever have imagined that the prime numbers had symmetry. How could the prime numbers, what most mathematicians believed, in fact, the statement from the very top mathematician in the world dealing with prime numbers prior to my work said that the prime numbers looked more like a random set of lottery numbers than anything with patterns. And, of course, with my work, it shows that there's tremendous symmetry in the prime numbers. And so understanding that is very important. Nature loves symmetry. Mathematics, all types of mathematical solutions have symmetry or anti-symmetry. A case of symmetry is where, say, you have the graph of a function along the number line, and the positive value of the function for x, positive value, the function has the same value for the negative value of x. That would be a symmetrical function. Anti-symmetrical function would be where the value of the function for, say, a value of positive x has a certain value, but when you put in the negative x value, you get the negative value of what the positive value of x would give. In other words, the left side of the graph is flipped upside down. It's asymmetrical. And so those are terms, but it's still, in a sense, a symmetry. It's a balance. The left and the right-hand side are balanced. And we see this a lot in nature. DNA, the very basis of life, is balanced. It's symmetrical. It's asymmetrical. The RNA, as they build up from the nucleotides, and as they build up from atoms, if you look at the energy solutions, Schrödinger equation, the wave function solutions to quantum mechanics, there's a tremendous amount of symmetry and anti-symmetry that comes out, which explains, for example, in the atomic energy levels, there's something called spin. And you have the electron spin, which goes in one direction, and then you can have another electron occupying the same state, but with opposite spin. Anti-symmetry. So it's just everywhere, from the subatomic, subnucleus world, all the way up to the farthest extent of the largest galaxies. Galaxies have symmetry, tremendous symmetry. If you open up one of these beautiful color plate photo books of galaxies, or go on the internet and just look up pictures of galaxies, and then look at them. Take a ruler, literally take a ruler, and go from the center of the galaxy out in any direction and find, a clump of stars or a space where the arm of the galaxy has nothing, and go exactly across the opposite side of the nucleus out in the other arm, and you will find the same lack of stars or the same little clump of star density. how did those arms, which are hundreds of thousands of light years across, how did they know to form exactly the same? Is somebody sending little messages back and forth? Okay, out here, guys, it's time to form a star. Well, that's what standard science would have you believe, because they say that the arms of the galaxy are formed by some kind of overall wave action that got all of this rolling. But it doesn't explain the symmetry. How does one side of the galaxy's warp at exactly the other, where the other side is warping? Anti-symmetrically, one is up, one is down, but perfectly symmetrically across the nucleus of the comet, or of the galaxy. How does the galaxy arm on one side know what the galaxy arm on the other side is doing? Tremendous symmetry. Snowflake symmetry, another perfect example of symmetry in nature. Six-sided symmetry in snowflakes. So nature loves symmetry, and comets are no exception. So I will be getting into that very shortly here. On the issue of Comet Lemon, now many months ago I made some announcements about Comet Lemon, and that this would be the time when the public would be able to look up in the sky and see Comet Lemon in the early morning sky. However, what has happened is the entire country has been basically chemtrailed to the point where early morning watching of anything is impossible, especially along the eastern horizon, where you would have to stop and watch this Comet Lemon. So it turns out that nobody has been able to see this Comet Lemon in the early morning sky, at least in the in the populated regions of the country. So additionally, the places where you would normally go on the internet to see pictures of comets have absolutely no pictures from amateurs, from anybody. Just as a contrast, a comet named Pan-STAR, which is a smaller, less significant comet with not the amazing properties of Comet Lemon, they have hundreds and hundreds of photos of this. A good example is if you go to spaceweather.com, they have a comet photo gallery. There are no pictures at all of Comet Lemon, not a single one, and there are hundreds of pictures of Comet Pan-STAR. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, clearly it's a game of prevent anything that Jim McCanney says from being posted. And why would this Comet Lemon be an issue? Well, it's an issue because the comet is very much discharging the solar capacitor. It's lighting up like a light bulb, and that would be obvious to anybody who is watching this comet. And then the next question out of anybody's mouth or to run through their mind would be, well, if this is true, then certainly that is not a dirty snowball. So they have to protect that dirty snowball comet model, and it's become a game with them, with NASA, and it's more than a game, because the next question, of course, in anybody's mind, anybody with a clear thinking mind, would be, well, if that's lighting up, what's causing it to light up? Well, it's electrical conditions in outer space. Oh, gee, if there's electricity in outer space, then can't we use that to drive our energy needs on Earth? And, of course, the answer is yes. So what do? They flood the market or the airwaves with Looney Tune so-called free energy devices that don't work, and a box on a table that somehow magically draws energy out of the universe, and this gets promoted. But the real issues never get touched upon, because energy is the biggest control of the world. Still, water is going to be one of the bigger controls of the world, but that's yet to come. It hasn't come into 100% dominance like energy has. Energy controls, the water is still more available around at least the developed parts of the world. It has not become critical yet. So, but energy is, everybody, you get up in the morning to make a cup of coffee, you need energy to do anything, to start your day, turn on the light, The water that comes to your house is pumped with electric pumps. Everything is run. The sewage that leaves your house is run by electric pumps. So to replace the energy consumption from coal, nuclear, and oil, the three big ones, and then natural gas is a third one, but the amount of energy produced by oil, coal, and nuclear are about one-third, one-third, one-third. So they're the big three. And to replace those, well, just wouldn't set well with the people who control the world. To understand my weather work, that energy to drive storms comes from electrical conditions in outer space, once again, the same issue, that electrical energy is coming down right to where we are, where we live and breathe, right here. The weather systems that move around you every day are driven by electrical conditions in outer space. But NOAA and the National Weather Service would have you believe that hurricanes are caused by warm water in the ocean. What an absurd idea. Right now there's a hurricane raging at the South Pole of Saturn. And where's the oceans there? There aren't any. There's a hurricane that has been photographed on the surface of Mars. There's no oceans there. This concept of warm water forms hurricanes is beyond absurd. The biggest storms in history have been in the North Atlantic in the middle of winter. Remember the Perfect Storm, the movie? That was the result of the Halloween blizzard. So that was in November in the North Atlantic. Three hurricanes joined to form this massive hurricane system in the North Atlantic. So just absurdity coming out of the National Weather Service. And of course, lately they can't predict the weather at all. They can't yesterday, snowing in the Rocky Mountains. And north of there, the same storm system had rain up into the Dakotas and Minnesota and Wisconsin. So just backwards, upside down, turned around weather, and the National Weather Service can't even predict the weather. A couple of days ago, it was supposed to rain profusely where I was. That was the prediction, 40-degree temperature max. Well, it turned out to be a beautiful sunny day with 60-degree temperatures. The Weather Service cannot predict the weather at all, not even the temperature anymore. So anyway, going back to Comet Lemon, the entire country has been blanketed in low-lying haze, which has prevented the public from seeing this early morning comet. The window of observation is very small. And so when you're looking along the horizon, you're looking across hundreds of miles of low-lying haze. And so the comet is just not visible. I've been out in numerous places trying to see the comet, and you look on the horizon, and even if it's a beautiful blue sky above, you get that distant haze. And what you're looking through is like 100 miles of haze. It looks like it's just on the horizon. You can't see it above you, but the guy that's west of you looking eastwardly into the horizon, for him, is seeing the same thing, that haze layer that's just sitting up there, and it blocks any viewing. That precious half-hour viewing window in the early morning sky, you just can't see this comet. And this is over the whole United States, where the bulk of people listening to my show would be watching. And I know I've gotten a lot of feedback from listeners who have been out there watching this. Now let's fast forward up to mid-September, early October next year, when Comet Ison will be moving very close, within 7 million miles of the planet Mars. I think this has been a dry run for that, so that the people cannot get out in, once again, beautiful viewing conditions. The moon is nowhere in that part of the sky, so you have pristine viewing conditions, no moon effect at all. And the same for next September. So this has been a dry run to keep the public from watching that comet. And so at any rate, clearly we have to develop mechanisms for the public to see comets, to see other celestial events without the interference of NASA, or without the filtering of information from NASA. Many fans have reported chemtrails in their area, late night chemtrails, or the evening before, and then they wake up the next day and they find that the weather is hazy over their area. As soon as the sun comes up, it clears, but see, then it's too late to see that comet. A lot of damage control going on within NASA. The latest story regarding Comet Ison, by the way, is that it has a jet coming out of it that's visible from a distance. Well, the jet is the sunward spike, but they don't want to talk about that. Typically, if it were a dirty snowball, a jet would be a tumbling, rotating thing, but this is a stationary jet. And, of course, there again, NASA lying about the nucleus, which they can see with radio telescopes. A typical comet nucleus would be rotating and tumbling. But they don't talk about that, because if they did, they would have to admit they have seen it with radio telescopes, what I've been telling you about. This is the hidden data, the data that NASA doesn't talk about. They don't talk about taking spectral data. You'll never see NASA release real spectroscopic data of a comet, because it just screams of the McCanny plasma discharge comet model. A good comet like Comet Lemon, which any amateur could take a spectrum of, that's why they want it blocked. They don't want those amateurs out there taking that pictures of that comet and getting the information, because it shows, first of all, the spectral lines of the elements of the comet, and second of all, it shows that they're red shifted. Okay, well, enough of that. Now, I wanted to mention something. This is a growing problem on the internet, so I'll have to, and I want to be very specific, because apparently the people that are doing this don't have any clue that I put a posting on my webpage the other day, and basically there is a small groups of people, a couple pairs of people running around the internet with mass mailings. Planet X is here, it's up over Saturn, it's going over here, it's causing pole shifts on other planets. And complete garbage. These people don't have any source of information. And let me explain how a lot of this comes about, and this has happened with me throughout my career, and it's only one of the reasons why I work alone. People become fans, some of them become then avid fans, and then they start emailing and sending in emails on a regular basis, then a couple emails a day, then 10 emails a day. And that's why the filter on both the emails associated with the business side and with the web page, etc., the various email accounts have filters on them, basically, so that if we're getting a lot of email from a single source, it's simply blocked. These happen automatically. But the point is that the people become fans. Then all of a sudden they think they're experts. And then all of a sudden they decide they're going to go out on their own, and everything is Planet X. They got to get the word out. Planet X is here. It's around. It's on the other side of the sun. It's hiding. And they start sending this out. They start developing little web page radio shows or something. Everything is Planet X. There's an earthquake. Woo, it's Planet X is here. It's hidden. And what they're doing is really absurd, because they have no source of information. They're trying to pretend. And then I a lot of times we'll tell these people, hey, you don't have a message here. You don't know what you're doing. Go chill. And then they get mad. Then they're mad because Jim McCanny's trying to prevent them from getting the message out, getting the word out to the people. And I've seen this happen many times throughout my career. So at any rate, I put a posting on my webpage, and if you're the victim of this, getting emails and stuff, not only put a block on your own spam filter, but you can easily just forward as an attachment the email, send them to your ISP, and tell them to block the sending ISP as spam. And do that. Let me repeat that. What you do is you block in your own personal spam filter the addresses. Then you forward as an attachment. You can just right-click on the email in your email list in your inbox, say forward as attachment, and send that to your ISP and ask them please to block the sending IP address. IP address is the term that you would use. And then that will go on spam lists, and then it'll be blocked. So at any rate, I put this posting on my webpage, and it's unfortunate that I have to spend my valuable show time talking about this, but this is the world we live in. My webpage has a posting that says, general caution, Internet imposters and wannabes are growing rapidly in number, especially regarding the very complex topic of comets, solar system, geology, weather, etc., and last but not least, the very complex topic of Planet X and the many Planet X types of objects related to our solar system, many of which have yet to be discovered. And so I said that these imposters and pretend self-appointed charlatans are feeding off fear-mongering and made-up information with no basis. They have no background with which to make any kind of statements and have no real source of real scientific information. They try to attach like leeches on the fame of people like myself. My unique personal work dealing with these topics goes back decades before the majority of these people were even born, and certainly long before the highly misused term Planet X came into vogue. Throw in the government-planted misinformation, and the poor public does not know which way to turn. If you have been the victim of mass mailings, web pages hosted by no-name wannabes, or internet chat groups trying to preach these topics and gain fame, leave the groups and register their addresses as spam with your internet providers. I do not have e-groups or mailings, nor do I have associations who would use my name. I never post on YouTube or chat pages or blogs, and my good fans know better than to get involved in these traps also. Beware of name droppers, those people who would somehow use my name in emails or other work. They're trying to pretend like they're buddies with all these people, and they're not. They're trying to borrow and twist my material in bizarre ways. None of them are related to me. I work, as always, by myself, posting only on my own homepage and my weekly commercial-free radio show and granting interviews with long-term, well-known talk show hosts. Okay, so anyway, I'm not going to read all of this, but you can read the rest of it on my webpage. I said also, beware of people selling safe zone information because no one can predict the future, especially regarding mass disasters. Beware especially of government postings regarding the topics of comets and this year's events because they go through filters. These are professionals whose job it is to formulate public opinion. Okay, so anyway, this is only going to get worse as time goes on. But the people, I'm starting, and in fact, I was on John Moore's show yesterday morning, and I breached a topic which I really am beginning to believe is true, that these little internet wannabes jumping up and down, everything is Planet X. When these people appear, they're kind of self-appointed, and they jump out there, and they get on the internet. It's very clear to me something is starting to happen, and they are subject to mind control. And they start doing weird stuff, especially related to Planet X. Start making all kinds of claims. Every comet is the forerunner of Nibiru. Some people are saying that Comet Ison is the Blue Kachina. You know, and this smacks of the stuff I have been talking about all along. But I don't say that Comet Ison is the Blue Kachina at all. There's no indication that there is any other object related to Comet Ison out there at this point in time. The Comet Ison came from the north. it's not a southern, it's not a comet that came from the south. You know, not that Planet X has to come from the south. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of potential Planet X type of objects. Hundreds of them that we know about. There are thousands that we don't know about that could come into the solar system at any time. So, you know, these little wannabes that are jumping up and down around the internet, that's exactly what it amounts to. And like I say, it's getting to the point where it's getting very obvious that some of these people have been subject to mind control, and they think they're being very important. Then what they do in this sequence of events, first they're a fan, first they send a few emails, then they want to send an email every day, then every time there's an earthquake, oh, it must be related to Planet X. And the government's hiding the information, and they play right into the government's hand because it's great misinformation that the government would have to find people to generate if these little yo-yos didn't pop up and do this. So then the gov jumps in and starts working these people, making them think they're important, and in a lot of cases slipping them money under the table to keep their little operations going. So anyway, this aspect of misinformation is very important because it seems to be coming from just Joe down the street here, if you see what I mean. Okay, so anyway, like I say, if you're a victim of this, just send those email addresses, send the emails as an attachment to your ISP and tell them to put them on spam lists. Okay, enough of that. But it's important to understand where this comes from and how it plays into the overall picture. Planet X is a huge, complex topic. The many Planet X objects that Comet Ison is a Planet X type of object. Okay? They don't have to be giant. I thought for a while that Comet Ison probably had a very large nucleus. Comet Lemon is discharging the solar capacitor quite heavily for a small comet. And so it's hard to say without real data the actual size of comet, the nucleus of Comet Ison. NASA says now it's only 2 kilometers across, which is, of course, absurd because the nucleus of Halley's Comet was 7 kilometers across. So the NASA story simply doesn't make any sense. But I would say it's a fairly significant sized nucleus in there. By the way, all indications at this point are that there are no close-lying orbital objects around Comet Ison. There might be some more distant ones. It's hard to say, but there's nothing that is showing up on the data that I can see. But, of course, a lot of this data comes from Comet, from the Hubble Space Telescope. That's the only publicly released data that we're seeing of Comet Ison. I'll be talking more about that when I talk about the symmetry of comets. But at any rate, any object in the solar system is a potential Planet X type object, although many of them are very small. Planet X typically would be a very much larger object. And once again, when you say Planet X, it's a term that is used, it's an astronomical term. That means astronomical term from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. The term Planet X means any object of significant size out there that has not been given an official astronomical name. That's all Planet X means. It's highly misused by people today. There's people running around going, there's only one Planet X. It's kind of a religion to them. And this is what I'm saying. There's some real bizarre activity going on in the minds of people out there regarding Planet X. There's many, many, many Planet X objects. Let me just make that perfectly clear. And so when I talk about Planet X, if I'm speaking of something in particular, that doesn't mean it's going to come close to Earth and drive us back to the cave ages. Not all Planet X objects are going to come near Earth. And even if one came back, say there was a Nibiru spoken of or the Wormwood spoken of in the ancient texts and in the Old Testament, etc., there's no reason why it's going to come real close to Earth again, you understand. So these myths in the minds of people are simply that, myths. There's no indication that it would come near Earth again. It might come through the solar system and hardly affect anything at all. Okay, so enough of that. Just a quick note, there historically had been a link to the radio archive subpage at the bottom of my homepage. Some people have written in, they couldn't find the link. I eliminated that link recently, and so you'll have to go to the information about the radio show. It's about halfway down on the homepage, and I did that for a couple reasons. One is I want people to understand all of the various ways to listen to the show, and that's all contained in that one little blip at the middle of my homepage. So that gives also the link to the archive subpage. So I did eliminate that link to the archive, the radio archive subpage, at the bottom of my homepage. And so you have to find it in the middle of the homepage. If you've been looking for the archive subpage link that used to be at the bottom of the page, it's no longer there. It also makes it difficult to manage having multiple links to the same subpage. So at any rate, that's why I did that. So it's no longer, the link to the archive subpage is no longer at the bottom of the homepage. You'll have to find it in the middle of my homepage along with the other information about the radio show, where to listen, etc. This brings up a topic of safe zone maps. Are there safe zones? Yeah, there are areas which are safer than others. But there's nobody that can predict on a specific type of event where is a good place to be. And so, John Moore, for example, talks a lot about the ocean levels rising, things like that. And that's a very true statement. Those things can happen. And so where would you want to be? Well, probably not Florida. Probably not the Gulf Coast, where you have a lot of water and low-lying areas for a great distance inland. Those are probably not the best places to be, the eastern seaboard. It's a very real threat that something could happen in the Canary Islands, a landslide underwater sending a tidal wave, six-hour notice time to the entire east coast of the United States and most of Florida, which would be very much inundated by a tsunami. That's not enough time for people to get away from there. And there's no evacuation program that's been set up by the local, state, or federal governments in those areas. So potentially very dangerous area to live. But, you know, half of the country lives in that area, the eastern seaboard. And in Florida from Miami up to New York and the whole eastern seaboard there. You know, a good probably 40% of the population of the United States lives there in a very vulnerable area with six-hour notice to a tsunami. Could that happen? Yeah, it could very much. Can people predict these? It's very difficult to predict. Will it happen someday? Very possibly it's happened in the past. When Ignatius Donnelly, the 1860s Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota, wrote his book, Atlantis and the Antediluvian World, he grew up in Pennsylvania, where the coal fields are in layers. Then there's a gravel layer. Then there's a layer of coal. And these were layered up by great tsunamis that came in from the East Coast on a regular basis. So it appears that that possibly is the source of that is the shifting of land masses underwater off the Canary Islands. And when that happens, yeah, a six-hour notice time, that wave is going to be across the Atlantic Ocean, coming in off the eastern seaboard. In fact, I'm surprised there aren't more Hollywood movies on that particular topic. But is that going to happen someday? Yeah, I don't know. I would not predict and put a date on that at all. But something that at least you should be aware of. There is a flurry of predictions going around the internet regarding inundations, let's put it that way, and other effects. This seems, the chatter on this, it always seems to increase greatly in the month of May every year. And so I'm not sure exactly why that is, other than it's a, something that I've seen happen for ages and ages. These claims of mass earth disaster predictions come in May. And this year is no exception. So all I can say is fasten your seatbelt. You're probably going to see a lot more of this coming up, people jumping up and down making claims. And eventually somebody's going to be right if you make enough predictive claims. But see, that's the problem. People are making predictive claims, and they forget about the ones that don't come true. And that's also true of these yo-yos running around. Every comet is Planet X people, which are destroying this subject, by the way. They think they're getting the word out, but they're a bunch of little idiots running around destroying the topic that they claim to be saving, which is a contradiction in itself. But that doesn't matter as long as they can think that some people are out there listening to them. But the plethora of, there's no lack of predictions of doom and gloom for the month of May coming up in early June. Is there a basis for those? Most of them are seeing in the future with some kinds of means. If something happens, they will all jump up and down and say, see, I told you so, and try and gain some fame there. But there's, from what I can see, there's no scientific basis for making any of these predictions now as opposed to any other date of the past, present, or future. But regarding safe zones, there are areas which are safer than others. But in terms of long-term safe area, I mean, if everybody goes to these areas, then it's not going to be safe because everybody's there with no food. That's not a very safe area. There's a lot of factors here, and the concept of safe zone maps has been around for a long time, people selling them, etc. And you can generalize, let me put it this way, you can generalize about where there might be areas that are safer than others. But with all the effects that could, and secondary effects and tertiary effects that could happen from a natural disaster or a man-made disaster, there's no place that I would say is really safe at all. Sometimes just your own house could be the safest place. If you live in even a suburb and it's a remote suburb and people just can't get there, it might be a safer place than trying to find some new place to go and you're out of your element and you really aren't comfortable in that new location, then that would not be a safe place because you're there with very minimal supplies. There's all kinds of factors to look at. Then you would be the vagrant, the out-of-place person with no supplies, and what are you going to do? So there's many aspects to this whole thing. What I tell people to do is shut down your utilities for a weekend. Just do it as a family exercise. Shut off the water, shut off no toilet, no grocery store, no car, no gasoline. You don't have any of the things that you normally depend on, and just run a weekend and just get a feel, get a taste of this. Now imagine that this is a month. Imagine it's 6 months, or imagine that no services will ever return. You start getting a little taste of reality here. And there again, talking about safe zones, imagine that you get in your car and you get your safe zone map and you drive there and you go, wow, we're in the safe zone. Okay, now what do? You don't have any food, you don't have any shelter, you don't have any water, you don't have any, you're sitting there with nothing, but you're in a safe zone. I wouldn't call that a safe zone. So survival and keeping yourself in one piece, there are many aspects to this, and running off on a whim to some place that you are not familiar with is not exactly what I would call putting your family or your loved ones in a safe area. Okay, on to the main science topic for the night, symmetry in comets. Okay, let me go through some other symmetries. By the way, let me just go back to the weather situation. We have seen storms rolling across the United States for weeks now. On April 28th, just a couple days ago, we were in what we call opposition with Saturn, and I've talked about this before. When we started seeing these big storms rolling through the United States and the whole world, right now we have a big cyclonic storm system moving around in the Gulf of Mexico and not being reported by NOAA. And two major storm systems in the United States, one stretching from Nebraska all the way up into Canada and moving easterly across the United States with many storm cells involved in this storm system. We are electrically connected to the planet Saturn at this point, and that is what's been driving this weather. April 28th was where we hit opposition, and so we're starting to move out of that electrical alignment. And when I started looking for this, I said, where is all this energy coming from? And, of course, NOAA and the National Weather Service don't ever talk about energy in storms. To them, storms just happen. They just happen to happen. There's no real cause of them. Well, you have to find a source for the energy for these storm systems. And so what I found is that, in fact, we were connecting electrically with Saturn. And we have been. So this is going to go on for a number of weeks yet. I would say a good couple of weeks into May, we're going to be seeing these major storm systems, possibly snow, up in the elevations and at the higher latitudes. And what's funny, not really funny, but the tremendous snow we were getting in Denver and the Rocky Mountains here the last couple of days, that same storm system north of there was dropping rain. It was actually warm north of there. So the jet streams are all messed up. I'm seeing the possibility of weather control out in the Pacific to drive these moisture systems into the United States. And like I say, the lower layer haze layers caused by cloud seeding and chemtrails to prevent the people from seeing Comet Lemon. Okay, back to the topic of symmetry. I talked about galaxies earlier in the show and the tremendous symmetry in galaxies, and that's a great exercise, especially for kids. Pick up a ruler, like a foot ruler or a yardstick, go to the library or go on the internet if you have a nice big screen or even on your laptop. Go to galaxy pictures of galaxies. And you'll see all different angles of views of galaxies. But take your ruler and lay it across the center of the galaxy and then look out into the arm systems and look equidistant from the center of the galaxy out into the arms. And you'll see tremendous symmetry where there's lack of stars in one arm. Look across on the arm on the other side and you will see the lack of stars over there. How do these galaxies know? How do the arms know what the other one is doing? The standard science concept that's pawned off on the public from standard science is that this is a wave that is generated in the arms of the galactic structure. Somehow something passed by and formed a wave. Well, waves that would form in that manner would not form in a beautiful symmetrical way. And so what I proposed back in my early work, one of my peer-reviewed published papers was dealing with the structure of galaxies and the cause of that. And it turns out that the galactic arms are being generated at the nucleus and tossed out. The other half of that process is infalling matter. As the matter falls in, and the it becomes a fluid flow problem, and then the arms, kind of like a garden sprinkler, one of those kinds that goes round and round, throws the material, the star material, out into the arm systems. Okay, so the point is that that is the cause of the tremendous symmetry in galaxies. And by the way, I noticed that the astrophysics world has copied my idea and now are talking in terms of those that formation process in galaxies, and of course with no reference to the earlier work that I did and the papers that were published. They just have a way of lifting stuff, stealing it, but they don't want to give any credit where credit is due, because that would draw attention to my other work, especially dealing with comets and weather, etc. Okay, so anyway, galaxies form tremendous symmetries in the when you look up in the sky. Other things that have symmetry, let's go down to the chemical world of DNA. Symmetry is an essential part of the world of DNA and organic chemistry. Tremendous symmetries and antisymmetries, RNA, DNA, they mirror image of these, and then when another DNA comes and meets with that, they attach, and all of these chemical unions take place, which form a new subsequent DNA in biological reproduction, etc. So symmetry, anti-symmetry is very, very important. Mathematics is littered with symmetries and anti-symmetries, asymmetries. And so what about comets? And there again, the so-called dirty snowball comet model cannot explain any of these symmetries. It cannot explain why there is symmetry in comets. The dirty snowball comet model says that water and gases are coming off the nucleus, and that was the original model, but when they got up close and actually saw a comet nucleus, there's no water, there's no ice, there's no snow, so they said, oh, it must be down in cracks. Well, they never could explain how all of a sudden this sunlight becomes concentrated, can get down into the cracks and get the water to come out. None of this makes any sense from the observations. Comet nuclei the ones they've observed don't have any ice or water or snow of any kind on the surface, and there's nothing coming off the surface. So how does that work? Well, it doesn't. Clearly, these people are living in a fairy tale land of imaginary science. But that doesn't matter as long as they have reins of the publication world and the popular press. They can say whatever they want, and the public doesn't have any recourse over information that comes out of the NASA and the standard science community. But if this water and dust, etc., were coming out of cracks out of the comet nucleus, typically the comet nucleus is rotating and tumbling. So these jets would be coming out in various directions and tumbling. And so now they would work, now they wouldn't, and they would come out, and you would see this tumbling jet-type action. And especially right now, they're seeing Comet Ison with what it really is, a sunward spike developing. And so that's very interesting, because now they're going to have to try and explain away a comet with a sunward spike, and everybody's going to see that. And they're getting ready to start telling people that, oh, that's just a jet coming off the nucleus. Well, that's absurd, because a tumbling comet nucleus, the jet would be moving in different directions, not stationary in a single sunward direction. So, but at any rate, with the material coming off a snowball, it would not come off in this beautiful symmetrical pattern that you can see. It's easy. You can find pictures now from the Hubble Space Telescope on the internet of Comet Ison. And Comet Ison is a beautifully symmetrical comet. Now, last week I talked about the symmetrical structure of Comet Hale-Bopp in the tails that are only seen with a Swan filter. These were the snake-like filament structures, the pinched water currents coming into the comet nucleus of Comet Hale-Bopp. And all of these comets have this, but you cannot see this with your eyes. That's another one of the lies of NASA, not presenting real data. They have Swan filters, on the Hubble Space Telescope. They have a Swan filter on the SOHO satellite that looks back and sees comets. Clearly, that can see all of these structures in the comet, internal part of the comet. And these structures follow perfectly the electric field lines that are predicted in my early papers that a listener wrote in last week and said they had read the comet book, the new book Comets, and saw one of the pictures that I had drawn in my early papers. I think it was the 1986 paper. It was the 1979 paper, the three-part comet paper that's in the appendix of the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes books, and then it's also reproduced in the book Comets, making a point there, but showing the electric field lines of the comet nucleus and how the streamers would follow those electric field lines into the comet nucleus. And so he was amazed that this prediction was exactly perfectly equal to the picture of Hale-Bopp that was presented by the astronomer in Florida that I was talking about last week. So once again, a paper that my theoretical work, 1979, shows something that was not observed until the mid-1990s with scientific equipment that really wasn't available back then, with pictures that had not been made public until 25 years later. Probably 20 years later, let's say. But the symmetry in the coma of the comet, this is the cloud of the comet. And now let's just give a little bit of dimensional information here. The comet Ison right now is about 15,000 miles across. This is the coma. They cannot see the nucleus at this point. Well, of course, the radio telescopes can, but they're not announcing that, craftily saying that no, with the Hubble Space Telescope, they can't see the nucleus. Well, of course they cannot, because they're looking in visible light. But they do have radio telescopes that see every small detail of those comet nucleuses, the tumble rate, the rotational tumbling of the nucleus. All of that is very visible, cratering on the nucleus. Excuse me. All of this very visible with radio telescope data. A couple of weeks ago, I also talked about the hydrogen cloud that surrounds the comet. Beautiful spherical symmetrical cloud, ion cloud that surrounds the comet nucleus. And once again, very symmetrical. Where does this come from in the Dirty Snowball Comet model? Well, it doesn't. There's no reason for a symmetrical ion cloud of hydrogen to surround the nucleus. And this is, this is also accompanied by, as you come in, hydrogen is the biggest cloud. It's the one that's the lowest mass atom. So it forms the biggest cloud. But as you come in closer to the nucleus, there are more and more what you might call zones. You'll come in farther, you'll see an oxygen ion cloud. You come in farther, you'll see a carbon ion cloud, and as you get in closer to the nucleus, these ion clouds that are shielding clouds are in somewhat zones, because based on the mass, the charge to mass ratio of these species, of these chemical species, and as in you get in closer, you will find the bigger hydrocarbon chains, etc., which have a very low charge to mass ratio. Let me just back up for a second here. What you're hearing here is something that would be equivalent to a graduate level physics course or astrophysics course. And so a lot of people out there are not going to understand all of the details regarding the physics of this, but what you can understand is, number one, the standard story that you're getting out of NASA and the standard science community makes absolutely no sense. And second of all, that you're getting a basically almost a graduate level astrophysics course by listening to this show, and so are the scientists. Many, many NASA scientists listen to this every week. And I know secretly the ones that are good scientists actually understand this and understand how wrong these concepts are that are being presented by the standard scientific community, like the dirty snowball comet model, etc., how wrong their concepts are, but that they are hogtied, they can't say anything, because if they did, their funding would be cut, they would not be in business any longer. Okay, I'm going to continue on this theme next week. I just want to remind you, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's www.jmccs, as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Seven letters, jmccsci.com. The weather book is there. The comet book, the new release, Comets, all of these are in ebook format now. And what I would encourage you to do, many of you have already made your purchase. Many of you have purchased the book set, the entire book set, $65, and along with other items, the water filters, etc., posters, CDs, DVDs. A lot of you have made these your purchase. Tell somebody else. If you like what you see, don't go out and try and explain this to other people. Just go out and try and encourage them to buy this set. And that's the best way they can sit down and read and have their own library where they can constantly refer back and understand not only how the electrical nature of the solar system works, our weather, etc. You can understand why the misinformation is being promoted by space agencies and the NOAA, the National Weather Service. Why is all of this misinformation being pawned off on the public? It's very important to understand the politics of science and how that works. So once again, go to the webpage. Right at the top are the selections for the five book set: Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, what I call the weather book is Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun-Earth Weather. And by the way, that may sound complicated, but these are written for the general public. Then the Diamond Principle, those five books are available for $65 in e-format, e-book format. And then if you buy those for $65, you get the new book, Comets, for free. So it's a good deal. I would encourage you, like I say, if you know people who, and especially this year when we see Comet Ison coming in, it's going to be a huge comet, I believe. NASA already doing a lot of damage control. It's important for people to understand the true nature of these celestial events. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.